Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
From New York City, the only city in America, it's the show that invented news. This is The Daily Show with your host, Cal Penn.
Welcome to The Daily Show. My name is Cal Penn, and I will be your host this week. Now, you might know me from my work as an actor or my work with President Barack Obama. Yeah. Yeah, I plan on dropping his name all week. Anyway, we've got a great show for you tonight, including a very special interview with President Joe Biden. He is a man who I know well from my time working for Barack Obama. But first, let's get into the headlines. Of course, last night was the Academy Awards and hashtag Oscars so Asian? Hell yeah, that's right. That's right, it was an incredible night for the Asian American community. So many Asian artists won and thanked their parents, which was like so nice. Although, honestly, if their parents are anything like mine, they were probably just like, okay. Let's move on from movies to music and some big news for a hot new artist.
A new song credited to Donald Trump and the J6 Choir is now topping the iTunes music chart. Justice for All features the former president, along with a group of men in prison for the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Wow. I can't believe I'm saying this, but those guys should stick to insurrecting. This song is such a turd, I'm surprised it's on iTunes and not Nancy Pelosi's desk. This is so bad, Mike Pence heard it and he hanged himself. And why are they calling themselves Donald Trump and the January 6th Choir? Coup and the gang is right there! Anyway, let's get to today's big news. The collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. I know, it's impossible to believe that a town that could spend $500,000 on this ape would have financial problems. But somehow it happened. SVB was the 16th largest bank in the country and the favorite bank of tech bros, disruptors, and anyone who's ever invented Uber, but for weed. So here's what happened, okay? SVB invested a lot of their clients' money on a bet that interest rates wouldn't go up. And when interest rates did go up, they started losing their clients' money. Then they told their clients, hey, don't freak out, but we're losing your money. So, of course, everyone immediately freaked out and ran to the bank to take out all their money before it collapsed, which then caused the bank to collapse. It was like that bank run scene from It's a Wonderful Life, but if everyone was wearing Patagonia vests. And look, People are legitimately scared this could spread to banks across the country. So to stop the panic, the federal government took the bank over and promised everyone that they'd get their money back. And it's kind of funny because some of the companies who had money at the bank were screaming on social media that the government needed to come and save them. That's right. All those tech bros who complain about being under the government's yoke were suddenly like, oh, no, my money's gone. Yoke me, Danny. So that's basically what happened. But if you're looking for an explanation of why SVB failed that doesn't require you to learn about interest rates, well, Fox News got you covered.
Part of the problem was is that this was one of those woke banks.
They were one of the most woke banks in their quest for the ESG type policy.
This bank, they're so concerned with DEI and politics and all kinds of stuff.
This bank, Silicon Valley Bank, they had been focused on a lot of these social issues in the last weeks and months leading up to this collapse.
They had a month-long LGBTQ month of activities just before the bank collapsed.
I think the senior vice president of risk management at the bank was heavily focused on LGBTQ plus programs.
The female head of risk management spent a lot of time spearheading what critics would call woke programs, such as a safe space for coming out stories.
Oh, right. The female head of risk management. That explains it. She probably spent the bank's money on shoes and abortions. For more on Silicon Valley Bank, we go to Michael Costa. Whoa. Michael, where are you?
Well, where does it look like I am? I'm at Silicon Valley Bank's headquarters.
Looks like you're at a gay nightclub, man.
This is just what a woke bank looks like, Cal. The first floor is a gay nightclub, second floor is a gay bathhouse, and the third floor is gay accounting.
Okay, well, what's your impression of SVB's collapse? Seems clear to me that it's a result of rising interest rates forcing the bank to sell its bonds at a loss.
That's so naive, Cal. No, the reason the bank collapsed is because of woke.
What do you mean woke? How did that collapse a bank?
It just did, Cal. Woke. DEI, ESG, POC, AOC, BET. The list is endless, and the list is woke.
I don't see what any of this has to do with a bank failing.
Well, that's because you're not a trained economist like I am. But once you learn the history, you discover that every bank crisis that has ever happened has happened because of woke.
There's no way that's true.
Oh, come on. Women get the right to vote in 1920, 9 years later, the Great Depression, okay? How about this? Segregation ends in 64. 17 years later, the recession of 81 hits. Coincidence?
Come on, man, you can't connect these. Women and black people are not behind all bank collapses.
Of course not, Cal. Sometimes it's gay people's fault, okay? Just look at the names behind the 2008 financial crisis. Lehman Brothers? Goldman Sachs, Bear Stern, Rusty Trombone Investments. It's all major gay financial institutions that lost money.
I've never heard of Rusty Trombone Investments.
Well, they lost a lot of my money.
Look, forget your theories for a minute. What can consumers do to keep their money safe?
It's easy. Skip the banks and keep all your money in your wallet like I do. That way when I need some... Oh, my God. Someone stole my wallet. I know who it was.
Oh, that's terrible. Who was it?
It was woke.
All right, man. Okay. Good luck with that. Michael Costa, everybody. All right. When we come back, my interview with President Joe Biden. Don't go away.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. Last week, I had the opportunity to interview the President of the United States at the White House. We talked about our divided country and how young people's advocacy can affect policy on climate, drilling, and human rights. Mr. President, welcome to The Daily Show.
Well, welcome back to the White House.
Thank you. It's very nice to be back. I was trying to figure out when the last time you and I had a conversation was, and I realized it was November 2016 at a very diverse Diwali party that you hosted just a few weeks after Trump became the president-elect. And I remember that you described that night as an Irish Catholic vice president and a Muslim Gold Star family celebrating a reception observing a Hindu holiday.
It's America.
Well, exactly. That's how I felt. I remember just feeling so positive and so much hope there. And then...
That was Mr. Khan, right?
That was Mr. Khan, yes, exactly. Then I remember just 4 years of policy and vitriol under Trump, and now things feel more divided. So I was curious how you feel that we can stay hopeful and how can we get the country to unify?
The truth of the matter is, I've never been more optimistic in my entire life about politics. No, I mean it now. I tell you what, look, if you think about it, the reason I had not, I give my words to Biden, I hadn't planned on running again. I had lost my son, Bo. It was a tough, tough time. And I wasn't going to run at all, for real. And then remember what happened in Charlottesville when those folks came out of the fields at night with torches and swastikas and the white supremacist, and a young woman was killed. I spoke to her mom. Then President Trump said there were very fine people on both sides. And I give my word, that's when I decided I'm going to do this. But I was worried about doing it because I knew how bitter it would be. And so I got a phone call from my, true story, from my eldest granddaughter saying, can we have a family meeting? You probably are aware if it's around here. We have a tradition in the Biden family. Any child can ask for a family meeting. It doesn't often happen, but you take it seriously. So my grandchildren, my four granddaughters and grandson, Beau's children and Hunter's children, came down on a Saturday, and we sat and talked, and they said, trying to convince, they said, we know you're thinking of running, Pop, but you ought to do it. Daddy wants you to do it, talking about Bo and the rest. Cool. And I said, well, it's going to be pretty tough. And they said, you got to do it. And we decided to do it, and I did it for three reasons. One, to restore the soul of this country. That's not who we are. We're a decent, honorable country that cares. We really are. We still are. Second one is to, you know, begin to take care of the middle class, because the middle class does well. The poor have a real shot, and the wealthy do very well. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, to unite the country. And at the time, people thought, well, maybe the first two, but you never unite the country. But look what we did. We got a lot done. No one thought I could ever pass the infrastructure bill. No one thought I could ever do anything about making sure that we took care of people with disabilities and drug prices and whole range of them. No one thought we could do anything on the environment. No one thought we could do anything about same-sex marriage. I mean, we did not all of it, but a significant portion of it was done in a bipartisan way.
When I was a White House aide, I remember having meetings in this room on climate. They didn't always go so well. And I never would have imagined 12 years ago that something as sweeping on climate as the Inflation Reduction Act would have happened. So my question really, and I was watching all of this unfold, is who or what created the political space for you to take that kind of action?
Young people, a generation, that generation between 18 and 35 now, they're the ones that created the space. They had enough of it. And so what I did was, when I trying to figure out whether I could put something together, I met with them, we had rallies, they showed up in the 2020 election, they showed up in the 2022 election, and we passed the largest environmental plan in all of history, over $368 billion. We got it done. And what happened was, Mother Nature let her wrath be seen in the last 2 years. For example, I have traveled on helicopter over more forest area burned to the ground than the entire state of Maryland. That's how much is burned to the ground. Floods, droughts, all the things. And so people can't deny it anymore. Uh-huh. They can't deny the fact. And I've traveled the world. I've gone to all the COP meetings around the world, meaning the meetings on climate. If we don't keep the temperature from going above 1.5 degrees Celsius raised, then we're in real trouble. That whole generation is damned. I mean, that's not hyperbole. Uh-huh. Really, truly in trouble. And that's why the first meeting I had with the so-called, you know, G7, the largest economies in the world, democracies in the world, the first thing we talked about was, they wanted to talk about, was my initiative on energy, on dealing with moving toward, for example, I called all the automakers and truck makers and I asked them to come to the South Lawn the first year and to try to talk them into doing something more, going electric. And within 5 weeks, all of them agreed they were going to go electric, 50% by 2030, and by 2050, all electric. Wow. And I think we can do it.
You're also responsible for reviewing drilling and oil production.
Yes.
What would you say to those young people who want you to continue to be their champion but might not think that you're going far enough or fast enough on climate?
Well, first of all, we're going faster than anyone's ever gone. We're going to need fossil fuels for at least the next 10 years. It's not like tomorrow we can turn it all off,
okay.
Number one. And so in addition to that, things got really complicated when Putin put 185,000 forces into Ukraine, uh-huh. having a profound impact on their energy ability to be able to keep the heat on in the winter and keep things moving. And so we're going to need fossil fuel. What we have to do is we have to, I've said no more drilling off our ocean. I mean, the whole range, but there has to be the ability to generate some energy. But we can get rid of coal much more rapidly. And by the way, for example, I was up in Massachusetts, one of the largest coal producing electric facilities in the nation. Well, guess what? We hooked it up to wind technology. And so now, and it's cheaper. We can do solar, we can do wind cheaper than we can do fossil fuels. So it's a matter of transitioning, but it's not like you can cut everything off immediately.
You obviously understand the existential threat that young people feel when it comes to climate.
Sure.
How do you balance that with the immediate concerns of babysitting Congress or getting 51 or 60 votes on some of this?
Well, look, I've been I want to be careful here.
Sure, yeah.
I've been relatively successful
right.
in working across the aisle. There is a MAGA Republican portion of the party. It makes up about a third of the Republican Party. I've had more than a half a dozen Republican senators I've known for years over the last 2 years come to me individually, and I promise I'd never mention their names, and I'll go to my grave, never mention them.
You can tell me later.
No, I'm not telling. I've never broken my word. And saying, Joe, I agree with you, but if I do anything publicly, they're going to primary me, I'll lose. The Republican Party is going through a significant transition. And we're going to see in the next 2 years how they end up, whether the MAGA Republicans control the party or we get back to conservative. Like, for example, a guy as tough as can be is the majority leader of the United States, minority leader of the United States Senate, McConnell. But he's straight. He's a traditional conservative. He's straight. What he says he does, he probably doesn't even want me saying this. It'll probably hurt his reputation. But there's a lot of people in the Republican Party who are traditional conservative Republicans that you can deal with. But, you know, the gentlewoman from the state of Georgia and the mountains up there and others, Gates, and anyway.
That's very diplomatic. I would have used different language.
There's an existential question that the Republican Party is going to have to face, and it's going to determine what happens in the next couple of years. But my focus is just stay focused. focused on the things that matter. We've got to deal with the climate. We've got to deal with civil liberties and voting rights. We've got to deal with issues relating to economic growth. Look, in this period, I inherited, I think it's fair to say, a gigantic mess economically and politically.
Of course.
We've created 12 million new jobs since I've been president. More than any president's created in 4 years. We've generated so much growth. We've created 800,000 manufacturing jobs. With the bill that became a bipartisan bill, with no one thought could happen, the CHIPS and Science bill, we used to invest 2% of our GDP in research and development. That's why we're the nation we were. Well, guess what? We decided to start, we ended up being number 8 or 10 instead of number 1. Well, now we're doing it again through the CHIPS and Science bill. Guess what? Commitments for $300 billion in investments over the next 10 years to build these chips. We invented the chips. We made them, we made them more, much more sophisticated. We used to be, anyway. So there's so much going on that the country's hungry to move, I think. And I'm confident we can do it.
It's reassuring to hear you talk about the ways young people can continue to get involved and that you feel like there's still bipartisan hope there if it's, you know.
Oh, there is. By the way, I mean, look, again, if we had had this conversation immediately after Trump lost, although he's not sure he did, but and I told you we were going to get more done in 2 years than almost any president has done, period, and much of it in a bipartisan way, I think everybody would have looked at me like, what's this guy been drinking? What's going on here? But we have. And we've been able to, the leadership of the Democratic Party has been able to hold a Democratic Congress together, and we picked up a few Republicans along the way. And I think it's beginning to bear fruit that it's hard to deny that it works.
Speaking of young people, the Supreme Court is considering striking down your student debt relief decision. What's the plan if that happens?
Well, first of all, the constitutional scholars I've spoken to say the people challenging it have no standing. I mean, the court is ultimately, as much as they want to rule, they're going to have to rule that it was appropriate for what I did, number one. Number two, if you think about it, we had this PPP program, that is the program during the pandemic. People lost their businesses because they had to shut down, restaurants closed, blah, blah, blah. And so we provided billions of dollars, significantly more than helping students with their debt. And a number of the very people who criticized me in Congress actually got benefits in the program. You don't hear them talking about it, right? The average student who will benefit from my student loan forgiveness program is somebody making less than 90% makes $70,000 or less. They're just trying to get out of the hole. They're just trying to get started. They're just trying to get up and running. And so it is overwhelmingly in the interest of the economy. It's a fair thing to do, and it's going to generate economic growth that's significant. I understand them worrying. I don't know whether people realize, a lot of parents realize, how much of a burden this is.
Yeah.
You get out of school, there were no jobs when you graduated because of the pandemic. You got a debt that is, in most cases, exceeding $10,000 loan you got, or grant you got.
Yeah.
And it's really a gigantic burden. You want to grow the economy. You want these people being able to go out and make a down payment on a home, be able to go out and start a business, be able to go out and be free to the debt so they can invest in things that they care about. And it's just so short-sighted if they don't.
I wanted to ask you a slightly different question. So my partner Josh and I have been engaged for the last 5 years, which really only means that every auntie and uncle that I have is beyond disappointed that there hasn't been a wedding yet. But Cardi B is going to marry us, apparently officiate our wedding, which would be nice. But my question for you, Mr. President, is you codified support for same-sex marriage and interracial marriages like ours. I'm curious what your evolution was like on marriage equality and what the federal government might be able to do to protect LGBTQ Americans, especially trans kids who are dealing with all these regressive state laws that are popping up right now.
I can remember exactly where my epiphany was.
Okay.
I hadn't thought much about it, to tell you the truth. And I was a senior in high school, and I wanted to get a job being turned out as the only Caucasian lifeguard in the projects in the city of Wilmington, the big swimming pools. And my dad was dropping me off to go in and get an application to City Hall in Wilmington, in Rodney Square, it's called. And I remember about to get out of the car, and I looked to my right, and two well-dressed men in suits kissed each other. I mean, they gave each other a kiss. And then one went, looked like he was heading to the DuPont building, and one looked like he headed to the Hercules Corporation building. And I'll never forget, I turned and looked at my dad. He said, Joey, it's simple. They love each other. It's simple. No, I'm not joking. It's simple. They love each other. And it's never been, it's just that simple. And I remember, you may remember because you may have been here when I, in our last administration with Barack, I went on Meet the Press.
Oh, I know.
And they asked me about their show. I was telling them I had visited a family in another state, and I watched this gay couple raising two kids and watching them run in and throw their arms around daddy and so on. So. They said, well, what do you think? Rush had asked me, I said, I think people should be able to get married. Married. It doesn't matter whether it's same-sex or a heterosexual couple. They should be able to be married. What is the problem? So listen to your auntie and your uncle. Get married. Do it now. Don't wait. Transgender kids is a really harder thing. What's going on in Florida is, as my mother would say, close to sinful. I mean, it's just terrible what they're doing. It's not like, you know, a kid wakes up one morning and says, you know, I decided I want to become a man, or I want to become a woman, or I want to change. I mean, what are they thinking about here? They're human beings. They love, they have feelings, they have inclinations that are, I mean, it just to me is, I don't know, it's cruel. And the way we do it is we make sure we pass legislation like we passed on same-sex marriage. You mess with that, you're breaking the law, and you're going to be held accountable.
Thank you, sir. I also can tell that, like, some auntie or my mom probably texted you beforehand if you're trying to pressure me too.
No, but get moving, man. I don't want to hear you can't do it.
I know we're on limited time, so I just want to ask you, looking ahead, there are a lot of names floated. It's a crowded field. Who should be the next permanent host of The Daily Show?
Depending how you edit this program, you.
Yes. Okay, that's a good answer. Solid answer. I don't think we need to edit anything then. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate
thank you.
It very much.
Thank you.
Stay tuned, because when we come back, President Biden takes us inside the Oval Office. Don't go away.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To The Daily Show. Let's take it back to the White House, or as my college buddies called it when I worked there, the Tide House. Now, I've been fortunate enough to be in the Oval Office a few times, but today I get to bring you with me.
Well, welcome to a place you spent some time.
Thank you, sir. I have the fireplace never been on when I've been in here.
I tell you what, I have it on all the time. Kind of humbling walking in here.
Absolutely.
I mean, for real. I had my brother Jimmy come in and, you know, pick the rug and the desk and all that stuff. And make a long story short, I come walking in like 5 o'clock on inauguration day, and I walked in, I said, geez, I said, I've never seen Franklin Roosevelt. I'm an admirer, but yeah. There's always George Washington's small portrait there.
Right.
And Abraham Lincoln and John Meacham, that president's historian, Jimmy had called him for some help. And he looked and he said, because no one's ever inherited a world economy in as much disarray as he had. And I thought, oh, that's wonderful.
There you go, the tracks.
And I said, well, why Lincoln? He said, the country's never been as divided since Lincoln was president. But what I did was I wanted to be able to sit here at my desk and look out. And I only had two political heroes when I was getting involved. That fellow over there, Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. I was a great admirer of John Kennedy, but I could never picture John Kennedy at my kitchen table. I could kind of picture maybe. And then the two people who I got involved and engaged with was Cesar Chavez, yeah. Because I got not involved, but I supported verbally the Farm Workers Union. They were trying to organize in Delaware when I was running as a 29-year-old kid. And his granddaughter works for me. And then Rosa Parks, who's over here. And so I tried to make it kind of warm, like I thought about. Now, the other guy never showed up on inauguration day, so I didn't have to worry about it. But it's kind of neat. And the things I've done in here, like, for example, the moon rock over here.
All right, I'm a huge NASA fan, a big astronomy fan. This is very cool.
Well, this is cool. That's an actual moon rock. Wow. And one of the, you know, that rover they have up there.
Yeah.
My name is on the back with other presidents.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cool. But I want to show you something really cool. Come on back here.
Right.
Not many people come back this way, but come on in.
Thank you, sir. Oh, yeah. Not only are we seeing the Oval Office, we're also getting a rare tour of the president's private study. This is like the world's most dignified episode of MTV Cribs.
By the way, that is a Wyeth painting by Jamie Wyeth, the son. And he told me the Kennedy family didn't like him because it made him look too contemplative.
Oh,
but
he's got a smile.
I know. I think it's great. But anyway, and that's the house I was raised in, Scranton.
That's awesome. Wow.
Or as they say, Scranton.
Scranton.
So I went and spoke at the Kennedy Library a couple of times. The last time I spoke there, I get handed this by Caroline Kennedy. And it's that famous letter he wrote.
Wow.
And this is the actual copy. And it's, you know, why am I going? We chose to go to the moon in this decade because that goal will serve the origins of measure by the best of us. And it goes on and on.
Well, that's, I mean, just even that top line, no prejudice, no hate in outer space.
Bingo.
I don't know if you have any tattoos. I've got some from the NASA Voyager, which was launched in 77. I mean, the golden record, which had, you know, science, music, art, but no politics, no war, no religion, none of the things that divide us. And so it's just the idea of hope through exploration. Unfortunately, before the president showed me all of his tattoos, it was time to go.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for the stories and the Oval Tour.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back after this.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's our show for tonight. But before we go, please consider supporting the Magic City Acceptance Center. They're a nonprofit dedicated to providing an inclusive space for the LGBTQ+ community in Alabama.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount+.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.